Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You should celebrate yourself every day. But some days, you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as the cool kids are calling it, Rahel Estepa. Rahel Estepa, you are listening to the free audio. It's nice, isn't it? It still goes up for free. But if you want to help support this venture and lead on to even more exciting projects, you can buy a video of this podcast and the whole lot in the series. It's £3.50 per show, or £15 for at least 7 videos, which is very good value. So if you feel you can support that, that would be lovely. Go to gofasterstripe.com and click on the podcasts, and you'll be able to purchase a season pass or each episode individually. But you don't have to buy anything if you don't want to. It would just help us carry on. There's a lot of men involved in this now. They've got children to feed. Anyway, on with the festivities.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has been making crystal meth in a pumpkin, the very special ingredient. It's Richard Herring.
Thank you. It's not blue, I'll tell you that. It's not blue. It's creamy. So, welcome to another series. It's series 4 of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, a Rahel Estepa. Until we're here at the Leicester Square Theatre. It's there's a few people in, there's a few empty seats at the back there. We've got some of the usual suspects, nuclear physicist Thomas Horton, the butlers are here. There's a couple of new guy. What's going on with you? All good looking. What's your name? James. What do you do, James? Are you a male model? Just when you come and sit in this room, just as a normal-looking man, suddenly you just look gorgeous. Look gorgeous. Look at that guy behind you. Ah! Look how good-looking he is compared if you sit with a... even you look quite good compared to this row of freaks. Always hang around. That's always just... If you're not that good-looking, just find 3 blokes worse-looking than you. That is my... So what do you do for a living? You're a postman. Oh... Yeah, how's it going with all the sell-off of the... Are you going to get some free shares? Yeah? What are you going to do with the shares? Are you going to sell them and just take the money? Or are you going to hold on to them?
I can't sell them for 2 years.
Oh, can you not? So you're going to hold on to them for 2 years. Could you tell the people at the post office that... I'm worried about the share deal, because the bloke who posts the post in my street doesn't know what numbers are. That's what worries me. I get mail for the people who live next door, two doors along. Could you have a word with him? You know where I live. So you all do. Anyway, we're here. We've had a little bit of time, haven't we, since we were last here? So a few things have happened. I was in Armenia last week with David Badil. As my dad calls him, David Badil, so that. We're doing a show. It's kind of an odd show for Dave, where we had to spend £8,000 in a 24-hour period. It's kind of an odd job to get in Armenia. It was quite good fun. We tried to redistribute it to the local people, but they didn't really charge very much money for anything, so it was hard to get rid of stuff. So we ended up staying in the presidential suite in a hotel for 4 hours. That's all we could afford, actually, for 4 hours, which is kind of amazing. And we only found out later that President Assad of Syria had once stayed in the same suite, which I think would cast a different light over our antics. We're sort of jumping around on the bed with money all over the bed. I said, that'd be really funny, Dave, we just got the money and just threw it on the bed and jumped around it. David Badil said, can we get some girls to join us? I said, no, that will not. That won't be funny, David. That will be. It'll only be funny if it's you and me. So we were rolling around. We tried to ring room service at this hotel. It's terrible being rich. I've never been rich. And I've never been able to do this. You get treated really badly. We're in the presidential suite of a hotel. We rang down to get some champagne and some caviar. And the bloke on the room service went, we're going, can we have some caviar? He went, oh. So, can we get two lots of caviar? He went, yeah. And a bottle of champagne. And then I said, well, I was trying to spend as much money as possible. So I said, can we get some cigarettes? And he said, can we get some Dunhill cigarettes? And he went, well, what colour? I don't know. But he was really rude to us. It was fantastic. I've never been treated so bad. Then he rang up about 5 minutes later and said, we don't have any caviar. So we were screwed. So that was worth doing. And the director of that programme had a very odd phobia, which I've never come across, which I would say working in the entertainment industry would be an odd thing. She was scared of... she had a phobia and fainted, passed out, if she saw anything that was oversized on what you would expect it to be. So basically any statue, yeah. I said, I better not get my cock out. Because I didn't, because that would have been sexual harassment. But if like any statue or any, like, mainly cartoon, if she once saw Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble in Tottenham Court Road, obviously people dressed up in big costumes and then fainted and then concerned, Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble came up to her and then she fainted again because... They came to. That's kind of an odd. You would think that would be a handicap in working in show business. And there were lots of statues around. It was quite good fun. Sort of lead. It was like being in Nightmare, trying to lead her around. Go, watch out, don't look left now. The gigantic blue bird. I've just been at the Amalfi Coast as well. I've been traveling. I'm an international jet setter with my wife. And the Amalfi Coast taught me that if life gives you lemons, what you do is you make a sickly sweet liqueur out of them that you then sell to tourists, who, knowing that when they get home, they will, no, it will, it will taste horrible because they're no longer in the sunshine, and it will taste of nothing but lost happiness. That's what you do if life gives you lemons. My favourite thing that happened at the Amalfi Coast, though, we saw lots of amazing things. We went to Herculaneum and Pompeii. But on the way back from Herculaneum, the train was just pulling out of the station. And in the sidings of the railway, in the middle of the day, so it was 3:30, I saw a grey-haired man being vigorously blown by a brown-haired woman. And I... Just by the side of the railway. It was a fucking amazing thing to see. And it was so hot. I mean, it was blindingly hot. But, I mean, I don't know if that's what they thought. It's so hot that no one will be able to see us. But it was just completely in the open. I mean, they were hiding from anyone in the town. But anyone who went past in a train could see them. He did have his back to the tracks, the man. You know, he's an exhibitionist, but there's no need to show off about it, is there? There's a possibility she was just trying to loosen his belt, I suppose. But if she was doing that, she was doing it incredibly vigorously, and I would say using the wrong part of her anatomy to do it. But I made a judgment. I guess that was a prostitute and an old man, but they may have been a kind of May to December love affair going on there. They just couldn't hold on themselves anymore. We can't make a judgment. I found it weirdly life affirming seeing this. It was so, you know, it was the middle of the afternoon. Most old men would be having a siesta. This guy was grasping the moment, and she was grasping something as well. And I found that quite life-affirming, quite hopeful. And these people live in the shadow of Mount Vesuvius. It could explode at any moment, destroy everything. They're just every second they have to make the most of. And they say fight fire with fire. So maybe you fight eruptions with loads and loads of small eruptions. And that might... But I was kidding. If the volcano did go off at that point, they were coated as the people of Pompeii were and Herculaneum. I'd love to be an archaeologist digging that up afterwards, filling up that gap with plaster of Paris, discovering what they were up to. That's the way to live, I tell you. So look, we've had a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun here doing adverts. Oh, we'll put that out of the way. Oh no, it's up there. And James is here. He's a postman. Very good looking postman. Are you with James? Yeah. She's your wife. Yeah, he's done well for the postcard, postman. Get free stamps, don't you, as well? And a gorgeous husband. What's your name?
Karen.
And what do you do, Karen? You're a musician. Why are you going out with a postman? You could be with a stand-up comedian or something cool. There's still time. That's my wife there. Hello. Wave at the people at home. It's the... I'm going to carry on with the show. I'm in trouble already. I'm in trouble, Karen, with my wife. It's the series four has only just begun. My first guest is waiting behind the curtain. She is probably best known for an appearance on Nevermind the Full Stops, the BBC Four panel show about punctuation. Will you please welcome Shappy Kosandi, ladies and gentlemen? This is it. There she is. Hello. I'm very good. Sit down. You can take your microphone out of there, or you can leave it in, whatever you like.
I'll take it out.
Let's make sure we move the...
Should I move this?
Yeah, move it out of the way.
Hello.
So everyone can see.
There's nothing between us now. There's two men right in the corner there, like you're the 12 men in the Muppet Show. There. I feel scared. I've got my back to you. Sorry.
We can see them there. Look, this is the beauty of this. I can film them. They're a bit too far away to see. So they do look like the Muppets. Do you remember much about Nevermind the Full Stops?
I got this incredible fondness for it when you...
Did you?
When you mentioned it. Because at first I thought you were going to say, Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
Yeah.
And I got that comedian sort of slight, sort of bitter... No, actually, I've never been booked for that one. but Nevermind the Full Stops. I thought, oh, yes, of course, charming programme. That was 379 years ago I did that.
It was. Well, I did it as well, I have to say. I did an episode of it, not the same one as you. It was hosted by Julian Fellowes, who... There's lots of flies in today, which is very exciting for the insect-based viewers. There's a lot of viewers aroused by flies. The ties are gnats chuff. So, little back ref. 20 years there. But Julian Fellowes, who went on to write Downton Abbey, was the host. I'm not just going to talk about Nevermind the Full Stops.
It's going to be
the first 20-25 minutes.
He wrote
Downton Abbey, so he doesn't do Nevermind the Full Stops anymore. It was such a cunty programme. I've never been. It was genuinely like when I did it. Vanessa Feltz was one of the guests, and she was really swotty. And I think we'd had all the questions in advance, but I hadn't read.
Was it a Radio 4 show?
No, it was a TV programme. It was like BBC 4 or something like that.
When BBC 4 was first invented, then it was all exciting because it was about literature and punctuation. Yeah.
But it was so specific. And I know a bit about punctuation and grammar, and I found it much too difficult. And I'm going to do an Obama in a minute and get that.
So many flies around your
head. I hit it the third time.
It's going to give you some money then.
He was so pompous, Julian Fellowes, and I didn't like him at all. I'd met him a week before and liked him, and then I saw him again, and he was really horrible.
Right.
And at the end, as we were doing the retakes, I did something wrong. He went, oh dear, how embarrassing. And I said, oh, fuck off. Knowing that they wouldn't use that, but...
Well, when I think back upon my career, Richard, there's so many people I wish I'd told to fuck off.
Yeah.
But just didn't have the bollocks to. And I wish I could go back now. And so I'm delighted that I can come here on your podcast and say, Andrew Green of Migration Watch, fuck right off. Fuck all the way off.
Why, Migration Watch? What's that? Is that like human migration or animal migration? Is it the UKIP program?
Well, you know, he would regard regarded as animal migration. I imagine. No, he was frightfully posh and ever such a nice man. And it was my first, probably one of my first ever TV things. And it was about going on a serious debate programme talking about immigration.
Right.
Because for about 3,000 years, the only things I was ever asked to do ever was something to do with immigration or from being Iranian. And I've been Iranian for ages. but I am starting to get booked for sort of non-Iranian stuff, which is really exciting for me. And
put away all the Iranian pancake making stuff we've got backstage.
Oh, have you hired?
Yeah, so I haven't done really much research there.
Pancake Iranian making stuff.
They mainly make pancakes. That's what they mainly do. Sorry, carry on.
I was expecting a whirling dervish. That's not an exclusively Iranian thing. And I had this big bag. And as we walked into the studio, Clive Anderson was presenting it.
Right.
Was it Clive Anderson or the other one? Anyway, a Clive. And Mr. Migration Watch went, "Oh, that bag's very big. Is that where you keep your bomb?" I know. And then, the worst thing is when someone's rude to you like that and insulting like that, it kind of pulls the rug out from under your feet, so I didn't deal with it. You're not expecting people to be cunty.
Yeah.
So I went like this. "Oh, God, grow up!" That was my comeback, right? If that had been Joe Brand, she would have had him sacked. She would have got in the papers with that shit. "Oh, and then grow up!" Like this. And then I was on this a sitcom pilot. Sorry, I'm venting.
Right.
Is this
no,
all
it's good.
Right?
I like it.
I was on this...
It started well.
I was on this sitcom pilot... and it went to series, but they cut my character out. I was playing... Anyway, never mind. But the son... I think it was the son of the casting director. It was a 7-year-old boy. And we're all chatting at lunchtime. And this 7-year-old boy said to me, "Oh, shut up!" And I felt so sorry for him. Because he said it right in front of his father, the casting director. And I thought, oh, poor kid's going to get really told off, right? And his dad said, "Oh, well, I think Shafi's used to men talking to her like that where she's from." Richard, I didn't tell him to fuck off.
Tell him to fuck off.
I didn't hit the kid.
Tell the kid to fuck off first.
If you're listening, Mr. Casting Director Man, I remember your name. I'm not saying it out loud, but seriously, fuck right off. Can we start now?
We can, yeah. That's good. That was the Julian Fellow. I looked at the IMDb. You're on the IMDb thing for Nevermind the Full Stops, and I am not, which makes me wonder whether they didn't even show my episode. So maybe
IMBD is.
It's very useful for this show. It just lists all the TV shows and films that anyone's ever been in. That's where I do my research for that bit. There's a little behind the scenes in the director's studio. Where I get my first joke from is going through IMDb.com and looking for the most obscure thing. You didn't have much. There was a few things. I didn't see Migration Watch. Some things they don't put on there. I did a show called Best Man's Speech for ITV2, which I've never seen, which was called to mind a little bit when I was doing this show last week in Armenia, because it's a similarly kind of weird concept. It's not even listed on IMDb at all, that TV programme. So,
well, when you never saw it, was it something you did? Because sometimes I do some things for TV and I just walk away from it.
Yes, I did that.
I don't look back, I just walk away.
Did anyone see Best Man's Speech, the ITV2, or might be an ITV3 programme? And anyone see it? No one saw it, it's wonderful. I got paid more for 2 days' work than I've ever been paid for anything before, and nobody saw it. It was the perfect
gamble.
Those
are the best jobs. Those are the best.
It sounded like quite a good. I don't want to just talk about my own terrible TV career, but we've started doing. It sounded like a good premise in which it was saying, you know, we've got some best men, and you know, we're going to get some comedians to come in
to coach them
to do their wedding speeches. So, well, that might be quite interesting, and you can have an idea, you know, help them through that, and that might be quite a useful program for other people, because people often email me and ask me for jokes and stuff for best man speeches. But then they just kind of made us do really stupid things, like the first day the guy had to pretend he'd broken his arms and on. By the Thames, and had to stop people and ask him to help him scratch his nose or something. You go, not really going to help that much. This is meant to give him confidence. And then we just went to an old people's home, and they did some jokes to old people for no real reason.
Oh, that's always upsetting.
It was just bad.
It's like doing gigs in corridors, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like when you just have to stand there. I've done. You know when TV first came out, and they would get comics who were kind of starting out, and they'd excite you by saying, oh, this thing's going to be on TV. And your agent would be like, yes, go out, do anything. And I remember going around Ealing Broadway Shopping Centre and going up to people in cafes and doing my routine and thinking this is really going to progress my career. And I spent all day doing this in the cafe, in the library. And then I just remember walking along the South Bank and had this hidden camera, like miles away, and I had to do my set. And somewhere in the world is this thing of me walking on talking to myself and people looking at that.
Let's hope so. If no one was actually filming it. That's why when I got, because this program I did last week was so weird. The premise is such an odd premise, and you kind of think, is that for real? And then I got to the airport at like 5 o'clock in the morning on a Monday, and I looked for the flight on the things on the displays, and it wasn't there, which is never. So I thought, am I in the wrong airport? Am I in the wrong terminal? Is this just a trick? Is the program actually let's make greedy comedians look like idiots by making them get up really early and go, no, there wasn't a show.
Oh, but, the things that I'm, the horrors that I'm talking about wasn't even paid for.
No,
it was back when TV was first invented, and they'd go do this thing for TV for free, and you'd go, okay, I'll walk around and do some gags to some mud.
We have done some good stuff as well. Well, you have, but I haven't. In fact, you've done like Live at the Apollo, which is very similar to doing this show. A lot of comedians see it as the same thing, and. Ben Evans, who asked the question to Stephen Fry that made Stephen Fry crack open like a
walnut kind of, at Christmas.
Some kind of a walnut that tried to kill itself the previous Christmas.
Yes, I read about this. Beautiful.
Very like that. He has got some questions for you, and one of them refers to Live at the Apollo. On Live at the Apollo...
Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, before we talk.
Yeah.
There's one Live at the Apollo I did that I really like, and two that I cringe at.
Okay, I think this is more general.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So I don't think he's going
to. I didn't need to share that.
On Live at the Apollo, one of your performances was pathetic. Even as an 11-year-old Welsh boy, I found it embarrassing. Well, he's grown up a little bit and become harsh. He's into his teenagers. He's a little Welsh boy. Should I do it in a Welsh accent?
Is he really written that?
On Live at the Apollo. What does it look like? Well, this is very good. This is a very specific card.
You're
accent.
A voice chameleon, like me. Yeah.
What does it feel like when you're standing behind the massive sign with Live at the Apollo written on it?
It feels like my life is going to be shorter than it was meant to be without that. Yeah. It is the most nerve-wracking thing ever. The first one that I did, I'm really happy with. And part of the reason I feel that I gave such a good performance is that just before I was about to go on, I went for a last-minute gloss check in my dressing room, and there was a man peeing in my sink. He was peeing in my sink. And I don't know who he was. I think he was a ghost. And then he came out, and Joe Brown was in the thing next door, and I was like, oh, there's a man weeing. And she goes, oh, they'd never do that if it was a blooming male comedian's dressing room, which I agreed with. And then so it was kind of like quite exciting. And
seeing the man
wee? Well, it was, you know, sometimes you need something to jolt you out of your nerves and need to stick your face in some fire.
Yeah.
And then...
Is a man weeing that? Is that seeing a man wee? For you, that is...
It's like my face in fire. Who's got cystitis?
Some people take coke. You just said, can I have a weeing man?
I need a weeing man everywhere I go to just get rid of my nerves.
Who was this? You don't really complain very much about stuff, is what I'm gleaning already. I would have gone to the director of that show and said, there's a man, or a producer, and said, there's a man weeing in my dressing room. I don't really appreciate that so much.
I kind of did. I did, but I think there's a life skill I haven't learned, which is complaining.
I'm presuming there was a toilet in your dressing room as well.
Do you know what there was?
Yeah. It's very hard.
But you know when you're drunk, there's a sweet satisfaction in weeing somewhere you're not meant to wee.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's almost the point of being drunk sometimes.
Was this man drunk? Why was there a drunk man backstage? We got no drunk men backstage here. Michael McIntyre's letting us down.
He was a drunk man. Yeah. No. I don't know. It's all behind us now.
Now Ben Evans is going to hear that and hear all about him with men weeing and stuff. That was an inappropriate answer for an 11-year-old boy.
The third Live at the Apollo I did, I was in a dressing room with Sarah Millican, getting our makeup done, and I was always that girl at school that didn't know what lesson she was meant to be in. My best mate Penny would tell me everything. Even tonight, Richard, I thought we were finishing at 8.
I know you did, yeah.
And I was like, oh right, okay. So I'd sort of slightly changed my plans because I never know what's going on. I turn up to things, and I said, how long are we doing? And she said, well, I'm doing 40. I didn't realise she was in a different recording to me, and she was comparing, so she was doing 40 minutes. I was like, oh right, shit, 40? I thought we were only doing 20 minutes. And so, like, with 5 minutes before I went on stage, I started cobbling together these jokes and writing these brand new jokes. And I went out on Live at the Apollo, and I was padding out. And like 20 minutes went, oh, fuck, I've got another 20 minutes. I haven't got another 20 minutes that I haven't done on TV. And then I came off, and as you'll know, it's a crime to overrun on a TV show. It's an absolute crime. And everyone said, you know, you did double your time. And it was awful because it wasn't like I was smashing it doing double my time. I was kind of dying on my ass, I'll be honest with you. And that was, I did spend about a week in a field in Halifax. Getting over that gig.
Why, is that what you do when you've had a bad gig?
I like to go to Yorkshire when I'm really upset about things, and I like to sit in fields, preferably near some kind of rusty tractor to make me feel old-fashioned, and I sit and think, and I phone my agent crying.
Yeah. There's nothing like going to Halifax to make you realise how lucky you are in your own life. That's what I've discovered. My brother was born in Halifax, so I'm kind of allowed to do that. He supports Halifax Town. Imagine how embarrassing that is.
Where were you born?
I was born near York.
Look how smug you are about that.
I support York City, who are much better than Halifax Town. They beat Portsmouth 4-2 this weekend.
So how come you're in different... Oh, God, that's a stupid question. I was going to say, how come you're born in different places, like you're twins? If you were twins, that would be of note. But actually, I mean,
it's not that,
moved.
You know, it's Halifax and York as well. It's not like beyond... how did you your family move so far in 6 years? Says the woman who's come from Iran.
Iran again.
My dad was a teacher. And, you know, he moved
in Iran.
In Yorkshire.
Right.
If he'd been in Iran, that would have really been impressive. That he'd, but you have to go back to Yorkshire to have your children like a salmon, like a headmasterly salmon, spawning all over the place. So. Last time I talked to you, I've just listened back to the Edinburgh Fringe podcast we did together, which was about halfway through the first series of the Edinburgh Fringe podcast, and I couldn't really remember much about it, and we were both in a similar... I think you'd had 2 hours sleep and had some vodka, and I've just been doing podcasts for... So we were both quite indiscreet.
That was one of those things I just walked away from, thinking, I'll just leave that there.
It was good. It was funny. I'm running a half marathon next weekend, and so I was listening to it while I was running a half marathon.
Oh, which one?
Training for my half marathon. The Royal Parks half marathon.
I'm doing that.
Cool.
See you there.
I don't think you will see me there, because you're quite fit, aren't you?
Well, I had a baby 3.5 months ago, so I'll be walking a bit of it.
So I should be able to take you on. But I was laughing out loud, and my wife was saying it was running with me. It's quite rude of me to be listening to a podcast. I was saying, you look mad laughing. You're laughing too loudly at that. And I said, well, imagine if people knew I was just laughing at myself. But I never listened back to these things usually, and so I had forgotten about it. The thing that made me laugh was me saying that Julius Awala smelt of my spunk. It's worth listening to. In context, it made sense. In context. We were both very indiscreet, but you were talking about them too.
I'm shyer about talking about this in front of your lovely wife than you are.
I know, she doesn't. She's used to it. Is that all right? So she's still laughing, it's okay. When we get home, it'll be a different story. She beats me.
How do you know Julius Wahala?
I went out with Julius
Wahala. I know you did. I'm just making you
say. And she
was
in Time, Gentlemen, Please, my sitcom I wrote.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, I think I was going out with her before she was in it. Yes, she was, yeah. I just put my girlfriend...
Here's our link. Her father was played my grandfather in my Little Cracker on Sky.
Oh, yes, I was going to ask this. I haven't seen your Little Cracker.
It's a beauty.
It is. But it sounded good. You've got Todd Carty was in it from Grange Hill.
Yeah.
Was he playing Tucker Jenkins, or was he playing...
He was playing... he wasn't really in it till the very end. There was just a little montage.
Have I ruined it? Is it me like telling people what happens at the end of Breaking Bad? Which is... you won't believe what happens.
I think I'm the only person in the world that hasn't seen Breaking Bad.
I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to show people your face as you find out. Have I pressed the wrong one? I think it's right. I wouldn't say... There's drugs in it. There's some drugs in it. They've got drugs. You know, the meth lab. I'm not going to tell you. That would be just because I saw it this morning at 9 o'clock. Sorry, yes, your little cracker. Your little cracker. Let's get back to your little cracker.
Tucker Jenkins, this kid who's about, I think, well, he's about 18, but who's made to look like a young Tucker Jenkins.
Right.
And it was about me as a little kid having a massive crush on Tucker Jenkins.
We all did.
And telling all my friends that I knew him and I didn't know him, and he came to our school and everyone said, "Oi, she reckons that you know her," and he pretended to know me.
Ah.
Yeah, it was a beautiful moment that I made up, sadly. But and the real Todd Carty was the end of it, and with photos of me like we'd got married. And I was always madly in love with Todd Carty growing up, and it was a dream to meet him. And they did the programme so perfectly.
He's gone off the boil a bit though, hasn't he? Let's face it.
He's a sweet. He's very funny.
Okay.
He's very funny. And they even got a white Ford Cortina, because that's the car that we had when we were kids. And me and Todd were sat in it to film a bit, and then something went wrong with the camera, and we were in this car for 45 minutes. And with a childhood crush, like 5 minutes is fun and jolly, but 45 minutes with this actor's getting really fucked off, that everyone's like... No, he was being very sweet, but it was very awkward. And he's lovely. He's still lovely.
Oh.
He'll always be lovely. He'll always be Tucker.
They're too young, a lot of these people.
I just realised that
Jenkins.
You haven't got a clue what I'm talking about. I'm just your grandmother at Christmas going, "Oh, he was a lovely fella."
Do you know Tucker Jenkins, James? Yeah, flipping
do
it,
you?
Tucker.
How do you know?
How old are you, James? Wow, you look like 13 or something. I thought that was your mum. So, I'm joking. We've already established you're his wife. Much older wife. So,
He's just jealous because he wants to have sex with your husband.
It is. I'm going to have sex with him, aren't I? Cool. Very good. So, you were talking about this in our last podcast. That's why I brought it up. But you were talking about you had a rock star boyfriend that you talked about in your your last show. Well, your very good show it is called Dirty Looks and Hopscotch.
Hopscotch.
I knew it had hopscotch in it. But it was very, it was a brilliant show. It was a very open and candid show. Yeah. And you were very open and candid in the last podcast.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I think in the 3.5 years that it took for me to get divorced.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was sort of overly candid because I needed to go through some stuff, or if it was the amount of alcohol I was drinking to see me through the court cases. I don't know, but I was quite Tracy Emin for about 3.5 years. And the rock star was really candid. Like, he had no fourth wall at all, no brain-to-mouth filter, and he sort of made me really open, and he sort of made me see the world as he sees it, where it really doesn't matter how you are and how you act and what you say. And it was incredibly liberating. And I'm a bit sad that I've gone back a little bit into a world where I don't really talk openly about the first time I went down on a woman and stuff like that. You know,
I'm a bit disappointed. I was hoping I was going to get on to that. I was going to get on that and just film you very close up as you talked. But there was a bit that made me go, and quite cross with him in the podcast, because obviously there was a lot of positive things from this relationship. But he said that he'd shown his mates you on Live at the Apollo with the sound turned down, because that was not important.
Yeah.
And then all his friends had said, and then he told you that what his friends had said was that you had fat calves.
Yeah,
which is
a horrible thing to say. And it was backstage.
Boom.
Oh, that wasn't the half of it. Oh, heavens above. No, gosh, if that gets booed, the rest of it will make you throw fish at his face. I was about to go on stage as well. And you know what it's like when you're about to go on stage? You need happy thoughts, you know? And he said, and I showed them, and they said, the rest of the band, they said, "Ain't you got big calves? But I'm looking at your calves now, and you're not skinny, but you're normal." And
awful.
Then I went, "Thank you very much, good evening."
And like, you've got very thin calves.
Oh, bless your heart. It's all the running that we do,
it is.
You and I, Richard. How's your training? Have you been properly training for the half marathon?
I'm really in a lot of pain today. I ran 10 miles yesterday.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but it hurts. I had to stop. I was going to do 11, but I had to stop at 10. But I think I'll be all right next week.
Oh, so I'm really worried because I did a half marathon in before I had my kid and it was fine. I did it under 2 hours. But I haven't... I had a C-section, right? So I know you're really into talking about birth and pregnancy.
Yeah.
Well, basically, it's like having major abdominal surgery.
Yes, you shouldn't be running a half marathon.
I shouldn't be running a half marathon. But I've sort of... I've committed to it now. I'll be all right.
Yeah.
Will you give me a piggyback if I'm struggling?
If your intestines are coming out of your stomach.
Oh, God!
I will do, yeah.
I'm a bit... Do you know what? Okay, I'm going to be honest. You just said that you ran 10 miles yesterday.
Yeah.
And when you first said, I'm doing a half marathon at the weekend, I thought to myself, oh, well, if Rich is going to do it, then I'll be fine.
I'm very fit. I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't done enough training, and I'm quite old. So, yeah, I am. This could be my last appearance. This could be they'll just play this with sad music at the end.
Oh.
Go, and Richard Herring died. Sponsor him at Virgin Money. Be good. Like, when you die doing it, you do raise like £1 million, don't you? That's the on the bright side.
Who are you running for?
I'm running for Scope.
Lovely.
Yeah. Who are you running for? You're doing it for, just doing it for yourself.
Bernardo's.
Ah, Bernardo's, that's
yes,
nice.
Yes, Bernardo's.
Yeah.
Lovely. There we are. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, we'll sponsor us both, especially if either of us are dead or have given ourselves some kind of injury by not training enough.
I might prolapse.
You might do.
So, God, that could happen. do you know there's prolapse porn?
It's
Sorry, is this too far?
I didn't know. There's nothing's too far on this podcast.
Because I will tell you that while I was, because I was single and pregnant, right?
Yeah.
And when you're...
Don't tell me you did some prolapse porn. That's as long as you just found out you found there was some prolapse. I was single. I had a couple of weeks off.
It was a really weird thing. Some weird thing happened to me. I got like completely addicted to watching porn.
Yeah.
I'd never ever watched it before. And when I was pregnant, I don't know, maybe it was a hormonal thing, but like once you stop, you're like, oh my gosh, what else can I find? And there's actual prolapse stuff.
How did you find? How did you get? What was the journey that took you to prolapse?
I think I might have thought because it was on a site called X-Hamster. I was like, wow, you could type in anything. So I was like typing things like bogeys.
Yeah, this is be careful because this is what you know. A lot of celebrities have found that leads to some terrible places.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
researching a book about.
I stopped at prolapse. Oh heavens, yes, yes. Edit that bit out. You know, you said there's bits, Shuffy, that you can just tell me to edit out. This is not going to be there. Okay.
This is gold. Okay. This is going to be on the international news.
But your audience are so squeamish when I said prolapsing after pregnancy.
I wonder what upset them about that.
I wasn't even sure what a prolapse was until I saw the board.
Right.
I didn't know what it meant. I thought it was something like a slip disc. Oh dear Lord, help me stop talking.
I don't think so. Oh dear. So I'm going to ask you an emergency question. That's a good time to ask an emergency question
to get out of that.
In fact, I like this is a new emergency question.
Get out of this hole.
Based on my direct. It's not really a hole, is it? It's something else. It's an inverted hole. Do you have any unusual phobias, like the lady who was scared of big statues? That's good news. It's a new emergency question. What do you think? Yeah, just trying it out, see how it goes.
No, I don't. I've always wanted to be one of these people who are really interesting and have a phobia of, like, nails.
Which kind of nails?
Nails.
Either. Both.
My best mate Penny, she's asked me never to say her name in public. My best mate Genevieve, she has a phobia of newspapers.
Really?
Anything print, newspapers. And when we were kids, I used to like roll up newspaper and chase around with it. And she once fainted. But no, that's a very real phobia. So yeah. I'm interesting by proxy.
I don't really like polystyrene being rubbed together. I don't think it's quite a phobia, but it doesn't annoy me.
No one likes that.
And one of the other people, and there was a very small crew that we took to Armenia, but one of the cameramen had a phobia of people scrunching their feet up on carpet.
Okay.
And it made him sick. It made him vomit if that happened.
Weird.
Yeah, this all came out on the first night. I thought it was a risk telling me these
things.
I had to
move places on the tube because someone was chewing their gum too loudly. You know, people just sit there and they don't do it continue. They just go.
Yeah, I'm.
I can't even sit. I've dated people that were perfect for me in every other way, but then you have a meal with them and can't have sex with that.
It's like the snotting back in the throat that happens a lot. The kind of when it's really viscous and they're kind of gargling at the back of their throat like a snot cappuccino. That's not nice. I was on a tube the other day and there were two men who were like about 55. They weren't kids. And you know, they were playing on their phones. They were playing a game on their phone, like a driving game, with the sound on. And I was sitting right next to this guy and I just kept on looking at him. And then I thought, shall I say something about this, or if I say, is that what he's doing it for? So I say, you know, why are you playing a fucking driving game? You're 55, and turn the fucking sound down. You're on the tube.
Fucking, did you not say anything?
Didn't say anything because I was scared he would spike me in the face with a knitting needle. That was
were they rough sorts, or were they?
They weren't. But you know, you just sort of think. You just think, is it worth the risk? Everyone was looking at him going. But there's obviously something a bit crazy about him if he's doing that, I think. Don't you think there's something a bit odd about him?
Yeah, I always say something. I've recently moved back to my native Ealing, and everywhere I go, I see little landmarks of my pregnancy altercations. I had loads when I was pregnant, just like really just any issue you have to bring it up.
Yeah.
And I would have said something, or I would have started singing really loudly. I've done that before to teenagers, just going, he lives, Christ Jesus lives today. He walks with me and talks with me, although he's far away. And then I think, well, if you make me listen to your tinny, crappy music, you're going to have to listen to mine.
Absolutely fair enough. I agree. What is the closest you have ever come to physically actually dying in real life?
Last week.
Oh, my God.
Yes, last week I was in Kruger National Park in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I was tracking a rhino by foot. My own feet.
Yeah.
And I was holding the tracker's hand and it was a real heart and mouth. It was scarier than I thought. Live at the Apollo was scary, but being very close to a wild rhino that's staring right at you was absolutely petrifying in the most exhilarating way. I felt alive. And if you were the motherfucker who stole my phone in Marks and Spencer's a few days ago with all of my safari photos, please give them back.
Has there ever been a more middle-class statement than that?
Stop, my diamond shoes are too tight.
I'm very sorry to hear about your phone. That is a terrible thing. And you weren't up.
No, I wasn't backed up.
If anyone sees Shappy's phone, so it's got pictures of rhinoceroses
on it.
It's
got rhino pictures, my son's 6th birthday pictures, a holiday in Cornwall, and a bloke from Leeds' cock. This bloke from Leeds.
Not in one photo, though.
I can't laugh too loudly here because one of these flies will go in my mouth.
I feel very embarrassed about the flies. I do. That doesn't happen, does it, on Parkinson and Graham? Because he doesn't do one anymore, and Graham Norton and stuff. They don't have a fly. Two flies. It's like a little ballet, a fly ballet is going on for people who like insects. So for any insects watching, that will be what is interesting. Oh, look at the courtship of those two flies.
And we're just in the background. Yeah. We're supporting artists.
We're supporting everyone. I'll ask, what do I have to ask this. This is an emergency question that I have to ask. I'm not quite tired of it yet. We haven't got long left. If you had to choose between having, is that how it goes? Would you prefer to have, I can't remember how to do it. If you had to choose between having a hand made out of ham, or that's a fucking fly in my face. It does add a new dimension to the question. Fuck off! Being attacked by a fly. It's like my hand is made out of ham.
Fuck.
visual element there. That's good. Anything you can do visual is good. If you had to choose between having a hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispensed sun cream, which of those two things would you have? The hand will grow back if you eat it, but slowly. You can only get, like, maybe 2 bottles of sun cream a year out of your armpit. But you can only have one of those two things. You ask any questions you like.
Will it grow back again, ham or my flesh?
Good question. I didn't think there would be any new ground within this question, but you have found it. It would grow back as ham. It would always be ham from there on. Once you've made that, you could not go back to non-ham ham.
Oh, no, I'd have to have the dispenser, sun cream dispenser. Yeah. If I don't, is it like breast milk? Like, if I don't use it, it'll dry up.
Is that what happens? It just stops going. It doesn't literally just become desiccated. You know.
They don't get like, powdered. Like, oh, stop it.
Like talcum powder coming up. Quite useful. Would you rather have a hand made out of ham, an armpit that dispenses sun cream, or a tit that dispenses talcum powder? Unlimited, will be unlimited talcum powder.
Talcum powder tit.
It'd be a surprise, wouldn't it, when you stripped off.
I'm too postnatal for this.
we'll go for talc tip. That is the new that is the new question.
Don't listen to him.
So here we are in season 4 of Rehelestapa. Well done. You did your first Edinburgh show. You did with Russell Brand, previous guest on Rehelestapa.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, how was that? Were you back in 2000 or 1999 or 2000?
I think it was 2001 or something.
2001, I think it was 2001.
2001 or two, yeah, really early on.
In a triple hander.
In a triple hander, me, Russell Brand, and Mark Felgate, and he rang me up and he goes, "Oh, Sherry, do you want to do this show?" And he sorted everything out. And I had no idea. I was so naive. I'm very naive about certain things. Yes. I used to be very naive. And then he said, "Oh, do you want to go for a drink?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll go for a drink." And he had no money, so I bought him a Bacardi and Coke that I'm, you know, will remember forever. And he went, "So, Shappy, are you putting yourself about a bit this festival?" That and right. And then I went, "Well, now you know what he means by that.
I do.
Now that we know Russell, we know what he means." And I said, "Well, I've invited a few agents to come and see me, and I'm doing a few extra shows. But other than that, really, it's just our show and just having fun and seeing what the festival's like and seeing lots of theatre." And then he just looked at me like, "You are so not worth fucking. You will never shut up." So I was the only woman in Edinburgh that year that didn't have sex with Russell.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. Imagine if you put him off women. Imagine if that had been the moment. Look, I'm going to have to go to men. Could have been
why
amazing.
Why would he have done that? Now, I can understand that comment.
Yes.
If he was now gay.
Yeah, but he isn't.
But so he's
didn't.
Not.
Because
no, so
you didn't. Imagine that he did. That's what I said. That's right. It didn't work. Let's just move on.
No, I'm just a bit sensitive about that because at university, I was madly in love with my friend and came out of the closet shortly after university. And he went out with a girl called and I was so jealous and sad. And I went to a 40th birthday party last week where people from my university were there, the ones that I hadn't kept in touch with. And all the old dynamics were back. And I was having a fag outside, I don't even smoke. And this started going, "Oh, yes, you know, well, Shappy was with the... Well, you were madly in love with him, weren't you? Well, Shappy and I bonded because then I went out with him, didn't I? Then I went out with him and you were madly in love with him." And I was like, "That's fucking painful memories, actually." And then I said to my friend that I was with, I was like, you know, quite, you know, she's carrying a few extra pounds now. And I said to my friend, "You know what? She hasn't let herself go. She was always like that." And so that's just a horrible part of my nature that I've just told you.
It is. Yes, it's a shame, really.
Can I change the names in the stories I tell?
Yeah, you can, but...
All right.
You know, you have to do it at the time. Otherwise, it's... If you want us to just dub on different...
Could you? In a Mexican accent.
Different voice.
Like Luigi.
I've got to ask you this question because Ben Evans will be furious. I don't know if there's a hidden agenda behind this. I don't think there is. He's a very sweet child. Do you know how to speak in Persian? Don't answer yet. And if so, what is "I have an orange fingernail" in Persian?
Well, the language is Farsi.
Okay.
Or Persian.
Fucking
actually,
hell,
no, both is good. Both is good. We'll go with Persian.
Okay.
I have an orange fingernail.
No, I have an orange fingernail.
Okay, the answer is yes. Vamanya angushin nakhune naranjidara.
Okay. I don't know why he wanted to know that. I don't know if, the, you know, it's sort of like an overtone of it's been up someone's bum. I don't think he was thinking that. I think it was just a sort of surreal bit of nonsense from an 11-year-old Welsh boy, but at least you've answered his question.
There we are. I'm glad to have made someone's dreams come true.
And so I also very much enjoyed your book, A Beginner's Guide to Acting English.
I don't like the title.
No.
I love my book, but they made me have that title.
Yes.
I'm very upset about the title. I don't tell people about my book because I don't like saying the title. Beginner's Guide to Acting English. What a dumb-ass title they forced me to have. Again, I didn't want to complain. I wanted to call it English People Smell of Milk.
Yes. We really do.
Well, of dairy. That's what the Chinese said. That's what I used to think when I was a kid. I was like, I want to be English. I want to smell of milk. But I didn't. I smell of coriander and parsley. That's what we ate. Because at school, no one likes to talk about this, but at school in the 80s, everyone in London, Ealing, everybody smelt of what they ate at home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what some people were doing eating cocoa butter, but, you know, we all and there was no shame in that. I don't mind smelling of coriander.
No. I do mind smelling of milk, though.
Oh, was it offensive?
Yeah, I'm very offended, but I do smell of milk. I'd never noticed it until I did have that conversation with you before, and we do smell of milk. I've smelt myself a few times smelling of milk now.
Oh, but I smell like of milk now.
Yeah,
I mean, right now.
Dried up, isn't it? Talcum powder now. But when you were, because Ben asked this question as well, when you were a kid, you lived in Iran, but you had to leave Iran because your dad was a satirist and he'd upset the Ayatollah.
He was a satirist, yeah.
Satirist.
Yeah, upset the Ayatollah. The thing is, to be fair, it wasn't a hard thing to do. You sort of cough in the wrong tone and they get a bee in their bonnet.
They do, and they've got those big bonnets as well.
Bonnets.
So it's. So you had quite enough that you were. There was a fatwa against your.
No, there wasn't.
Was not. Okay.
No, that's Wikipedia. They won't take that down.
Right.
There wasn't a fatwa because it wasn't from a religious point of view. Like my dad was never. He was never. Religious folk were never after him for being blasphemous. Can I just stress that repeatedly throughout this podcast?
Yes.
He has never said anything bad about any religion. He respects all religion. Honestly, the fear. Once someone tries to do, like, kill your family when you're 11, it never quite leaves you. That feeling of at any moment someone might put a bomb under your car never quite leaves you. But that's the job of terrorists, isn't it?
It is.
To inflict terror.
It is.
And we were terrified. Thanks for bringing it up.
I'm sorry. Well, when you were a kid, you had to look under.
Under the car for bombs.
But you didn't know what.
What they looked like. My dad, remember, like, the only bomb we'd know if it was, like, very round with a big fuse with B-O-M-B written on it. Other than that, my dad's not a mechanic. He's a poet. He's like, oh, no, I know. Just get in, turn on the ignition, close your eyes, see if it's all right. And it was.
Did he ever make you turn on the ignition? Just get in there, Shafi. No, of course not. Of course he wouldn't have done. That. That would be awful. It's a fantastic book. Do read it if you get the chance.
Oh, yeah, the book's good.
It is good.
Yeah, I've just learned off the title.
Yeah.
Yeah, the actual book's
good.
Don't
read the title, but read everything else in it.
Just close your eyes and read it and read the acknowledgements. I especially like the acknowledgements of my book.
Oh, yes.
Just went on and on and on. They're about 17 pages because I thought this is my chance. Thank everyone for everything. I thank people that did nothing for my book. Anyway.
Todd Carty?
Todd Carty's there, yeah. He ghost wrote my book.
Good to see. Right. Mike Stoner wants you to know that your name is an anagram of Posh Kids Piranha.
Lovely.
That's all he's got to say. About you. You've done a lot. I mean, you have done a wide variety of TV shows. I was watching you with Andrew Neil, who is a fucking prick.
Is he?
Don't you think so? You've talked to him.
I don't. I don't know. I think I try to see the good in everybody.
It was you, Andrew Neil, and Michael Patillo, and that Labour bloke.
That sounded far more syrupy than I meant it to, by the way. It's just, I know you well enough, but I don't know you well enough to share that sentiment.
But Michael Portillo was quite unpleasant, I thought, on that thing. He made some comment, I thought you were a comedian. You'd said something serious, and he went, oh, I'm waiting for the joke. I thought you were a comedian.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah. He's actually quite all right to chat to off stage. It's all right.
Is he all right?
Yeah. They've just got a talk at night, and there's lots of wine drunk on that show before.
During and before and during.
Yeah, and... Andrew Neil comes out and checks Twitter straight away, checks all his trolls.
The worst thing, it's called This Week, isn't it, this programme? They always try to do a sort of amusing sketch at the top of the show.
Yeah, I've done a few of those amusing sketches. Yeah, I mean, they try and keep it light, don't they? Well, the person I objected to being on that was Alistair Campbell. It's incredible that this man has a television career. I mean, he's on more comedy panel shows than I am, and I didn't even invade anyone. It's something I can't quite get my head around, that he's out there and not, you know, in prison.
Fair enough. Yes, you've done Question Time, Let's Dance.
I did that twice. And, I can't even... Oh, yeah.
Well, it's kind of an odd one when comedians go on it, though, sometimes.
Is it?
Well, don't you think so?
Well, yeah, I think...
Were you fairly serious? I didn't see them.
I was quite serious, yeah. The first time I went on it was great because I hadn't done any telly, really. And Twitter didn't exist. But the second one, it did exist, and I had done a bit more telly, and it just felt a little bit like I'm out there with my opinions. And the thing is about Question Time is the people that are really used to doing it, they will say any old shit, and they know the rhythm to speak in to get that applause at the end. I eat fish. Everyone starts clapping, right? Thank you. And I'm not used to doing that, so I would sort of start quite earnest and then realise that I was talking for far too long and someone had interrupted me, and I was like, oh, geez, it's like being on Mott the Week. That was the great time, 7 years ago. Anyway, so let's move on. Okay. Question Time.
Well, yes. We can move on.
We don't have to move on. I'll ask you
a final question. Have you ever... I saw an old Italian man getting a blowjob in a railway sidings. What, have you ever seen any al fresco sex from other people? Apart from, you've seen a man weeing in a basin. I don't think that counts. It has to be with someone else. Have you ever seen an unusual sexual encounter?
I haven't, no.
Has anyone seen you being involved in one? It seemed to be where we're going next.
Where was this railway line?
It was in there. Was it Keith Allen? So, could have been. No,
I haven't ever seen anyone have sex in public, ever. No. Oh, yes, I have. I went to a sex show in Amsterdam. Does that count?
Yeah, not really. No, it's not quite the same.
It doesn't even count as real sex. It's so weird and sanitised. It's clearly all set up. There's a stage, there's lights, there's all sorts of shit. No, it's no fun.
Yeah, it doesn't quite count as the same. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
Well, I'm a size 7 and I'm 5'2".
Yeah,
does that count?
That doesn't count.
Okay. Have I ever seen a Bigfoot? No.
No. Have you ever seen a ghost apart from the ghost of the Hammersmith Apollo?
No, I really wanted to see a ghost.
Yeah.
When my gran died, I thought, oh, maybe this will be the time when I'll be proved wrong that there's a God and she'll come to me in ghost form.
I don't think that proves there's a God. I think that proves there isn't a God and that all our souls are left wandering the earth in pain and...
Oh, no, but it shows that there's something, though. It shows that there's something supernatural.
Yeah, just like people wandering the earth going, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's all there is. Then that would be awful to know that.
No, so but there she didn't. She was fine.
No, she's up in heaven. She's fine.
Yeah, no, she's fine. She was proper gone.
she's got her feet up. She's not going to come back in.
No, but I am scared of ghosts, though, even though I don't believe in them. I'm petrified of them. Sometimes I have to leave my own house and sit in the garden in the daytime. And I'm so scared of... ghosts. I started writing ghost stories, but I freaked myself out. So I've got about five quarter-written ghost books, ghost stories.
You're too scared
I'm
to finish them.
I'm too scared
them
to finish
off.
Them.
They must be good, though. That's pretty good.
I get the heebie-jeebies. Yeah.
You should put them out as the ghost stories that are too terrifying to finish. And that's sort of more scary than a finished one, because it's like, fuck, something really bad happens now. I can't... The person in writing this is now dead.
Oh, no. So I'm yet to see a ghost.
Okay. It's good to know. When you are a ghost, you'll see loads of ghosts. Or, you know, you might be a ghost already and not know you're a ghost. And all the people you see are ghosts already.
Oh, well, then that's fine, then, because then the indiscreet stuff I've said now won't matter.
It won't matter, because it still goes out as a podcast. That's what happens at the end of Sixth Sense. Bang! Ruined it for you. And at the end of Breaking Bad. So, they were all ghosts. They were all ghosts. They were all going, all the dead people come back. They go, hey, come on in. You were dead all along. You died of cancer right at the beginning. Well, come on in. Hey. That is literally what happens. There's no point in watching it now. I've wrecked it for you. Can I just tell you one thing? It's like Christmas. It's like Christmas Eve. You're allowed to open one present. And the present is... This will be nothing for people. Everyone at home will have seen it already because this is coming out next week. Does Todd die?
You don't want to know. Don't tell her. Don't tell me anything.
Todd's life or death is crucial to the whole thing. You don't like him. Well, what do you think? Do you think Todd dies? Or do you think he will die? Do you think he will die or he won't die? Mm-hmm. Got a surprise coming up for you when he doesn't die. I can't believe after all that. Sorry, Shappy, I know you've got to go.
It's awful.
Believe after
I don't
all
watch
that
this
you go,
program.
Does Todd die?
About.
Don't tell me anything. Does Todd die? What happens just at the right at the end? Just tell me that. That's all I want to know. I've never seen Breaking Bad. Good. Look, you've got to go and do some stuff. So I can't hold you up any longer. So it's been having fun. It'd be like,
we could have lots of fun.
You can come back another time. I'll try and do it without flies next time.
Yeah,
I am embarrassed.
I feel
embarrassed that we're flies.
Oh, I've had fun. I always like talking to you.
I love talking to you. You're fantastic. Will you please give a massive round of applause to Shappy Kosandy, ladies and gentlemen?
Thank you.
Wonderful Shappy Kosandy. We can go. I've been listening to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Shappy Kosandy. The music was by Pest, thanks to Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide, all the staff at the Leicester Square Theatre, and Chris Evans, not that one, or the one from The Avengers. It was produced by Dave Cribb and Ben Walker. This is a Fuzz, Go Faster Stripe, and Sky Potato production for the internet. Go and buy the video. Hooray! If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can, of course, go and buy the video if you want to give us something back, or if you'd prefer to give us money in different ways, here are a few ideas. If you want to come and see my new stand-up show, We're All Going to Die, that will be at the Leicester Square Theatre from the 8th to the 13th of October. Do come along. It's selling well at the weekend, so do book ahead if you want to come and see that. It's Tuesday to Sunday, though, so... You know, there's probably tickets for Tuesday. We have got more Rahelastapas coming up. On the 7th of October, my guest will be Miranda Hart. The 14th, it is Ross Noble and Dara O'Brien. And on the 24th of October, I think is the date, we have Simon Pegg and maybe one other guest. So buy tickets to come and see it live or go and buy the video pass. Also at gofasterstripe.com, you can buy all my DVDs and some of my books. And I'm running a half marathon. At the weekend, might have just run it, in fact, by the time you got this. If you want to sponsor me, all the money will go to Scope. Go to ukvirginmoneygiving.com/Richard Herring and you can pay £1 or more to sponsor me, and all that money will go to charity if you resent giving me any actual money. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Go and watch it online. Go on. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.